from stpetecatalyst.com.
Joining me on Impact Catalyst is Clayton Sizemore, who is the founder of Mindful Movement here in Florida. Welcome, sir.
Welcome. So glad to be here with you, Joe. Thank you.
So you do a lot of great work. I'm actually just feeling zen just talking to you already. So that's we're off to a good start.
That is a good start for sure.
So let's do the obligatory 101 on mindful movement, so we know what we're working with, and then we can go a little further from there.
You got it. Well, Mindful Movement is an organization that's here in St. Petersburg now, going on 6 years, and we bring health and holistic issues to underserved communities. In particular, we're working in South St. Pete, and we've been really just fortunate and blessed with the success that we've had. You know, we tell people all the time that making a young person mindful is probably the most important thing you can do to them. And we've been successful. We are now in 12 schools. 10 Title I schools in St. Petersburg, Pinellas County. We're in two private schools, charter schools here in St. Petersburg. And we're also with four enrichment programs, working with four enrichment programs, after school enrichment programs. We work with the police department. We work with the city of St. Petersburg, the Cohorts of Champions program, as well as Men in the Making. And again, we've just been blessed to be working with these young people. And in addition to all of that, my team and I, we do four community yoga classes, free community yoga classes, every single week, Monday through Friday.
That's great. So, you know, we look at the school district, there's a lot of entities, businesses, nonprofits, they all compete for students' attention via the administration. So as you go in and know that you know the folks you're talking to will, you know, have some basic understanding of mindfulness or yoga or things like that, but also know that they have a lot of other things on their plate, what's the pitch to them to make them take notice of Mindful Movement and let you go into these classrooms?
Well, the school system, first and foremost, we've been blessed to have our guardian angel, Miss Lori Matway. She's one of the heads of the Pinellas County School System. And Lori's been our guardian angel. She's really kind of been very helpful in getting us in front of a lot of schools. And one of the things that we recognize is that the school system, they do such a great job in Pinellas County. But one of the things that we're able to partner with them and assist them with is the mindful aspect of it. We come in and our organization is kind of like Switzerland. We're neutral. And, you know, we're not grading these scholars. We're not testing them. We're not, you know, marshaling them through the hallways. We come in and we basically sit down with them and we help them to self-regulate themselves. So we partner with the schools and work very closely with the schools to identify the scholars that they believe that mindful movement programs can assist them with. And one of the most important things we teach young people is how to self-regulate. Our big thing is the greatest computer in the world is right here, right in between your ears, and that anger is not a bad emotion. However, we have to understand and learn how to manage and control our anger and never ever let our anger control us. So it is a process. And it is probably, again, from my opinion, one of the most important things you can teach a young person, how to become mindful. It changes everything about them. And again, it's a process. They don't get it overnight. But when they're exposed to it, when they understand that my breath, I can regulate myself. I need to think before I react. Okay, I might have to do whatever I have to do, but if I think about it before I do it, I'm going to make a better decision. When I'm getting ready to go into the classroom and take a test, look, I've been studying, I've been doing my work all year round. I need to just calm myself down, relax, and go in there and do my best. It's going to be okay. So the biggest thing for us is to teach them how to use their superpower, which is their mind, and to basically regulate yourself so that you can deal with the stresses and the challenges that, believe it or not, many young people are faced with. And another thing that we recognize, and we partner so well with the schools, is that the teachers, sometimes the teachers need yoga as badly as the kids. And whenever we go to a school, we work with the teachers initially so that they can understand what we're doing. So we do what we call Heal the Healers program, and we sit down and do a workshop prior to the school year during their orientations so that they understand who we are and what we're doing and so that we can better partner with the schools.
Makes a lot of sense. And you mentioned testing. You know, obviously the school districts are constantly challenged to quantify everything that they do. And you talked about helping, you know, specifically identifying scholars who regulating, self-regulating would be an important, you know, skill to learn. So then how do you quantify your success? Is it in the folks who have less disciplinary problems after having gone through the program because they're self-regulating better, or are there some other parameters as well?
There's quite a few different types of parameters, but we always leave that up to the school. We let the school identify the scholars, and then, of course, there's different ways that they're able to monitor and track what's happening with the scholars. We do surveys at the beginning of classes, at the beginning of sessions, not each session, but like throughout a semester. We'll do a survey with the scholars. We'll do a survey at the end of that semester, and we'll work with the school to basically try to understand, okay, has this particular person's behavior improved. And we're finding that about 60% of the scholars that we deal with, there is improvement with their behavior. But again, it's based on what the schools need. One of the things that we're recognizing is that what I consider the high flyers, those really outstanding scholars, they need yoga even more than some of the scholars that are having some challenges. But we leave that always up to the school. We want to do and partner with the school so that we can best serve them.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because that was kind of leading to my next thought was, you know, sometimes it's the high flyers, as you mentioned, that can actually benefit from the transcendent elements of yoga and mindfulness. And sometimes, you know, they may not have access to it because they don't seem to need the immediate self-regulation attention that others may. So it's glad that you're getting some impact with them as well. So you mentioned, yoga. There was a history of using yoga in the name, and then you ended up not. So, you know, what's the general, are there any kind of stereotypes about yoga or assumptions about yoga versus mindfulness? And how, is that a line you have to walk? And if so, how does that go?
You know, it really depends. You know, mindfulness basically means maintaining a moment-by-moment awareness of our thoughts, our feelings, you know, and our bodily sensations, you know, and really our surrounding environment. And never, ever really, you want to do that through a gentle, nurturing lens. Mindfulness also involves acceptance, which is really, really important, meaning that we have to pay attention not only to our thoughts without judging them and, you know, without believing that there's a right or wrong, but also when we practice mindfulness, our thoughts kind of tune in to what we're sensing at the present moment, and you know, not rehashing or going through things in the past. So that's very important to understand the whole idea of what is mindfulness. And then when we are working with the schools and the scholars, it's important to give people that sense of, okay, well, this is who we are. With these mindfulness instructors. And one of the challenges for us in Florida has been, you know, a lot of times, especially in underserved communities, black communities, minority communities, they think that yoga is a religion, that it's a faith. So we kind of separated ourselves from yoga because we were once a part of an organization called Urban Yoga, and we changed the mindful movement. And we found that did make a little bit of a difference in terms of just, you know, removing that potential stigma, you know, from the school systems as well as from the community. And I think we've benefited from that.
That's great. And, you know, if you talk about working with, in challenged or disadvantaged areas, getting their first blush with these kinds of philosophies and these kinds of practices, what's the responses you typically get? You've been doing it for a while now, but was there sort of a response that surprised you, or what's been sort of the consistent theme of how these kids react to experiencing this for the first time?
I'm amazed again at how they're reacting because it really changes them. You know, one of the things we recognize when a young person becomes mindful, and I give the classic example of if somebody was to give you a brand new Mercedes-Benz, what kind of gasoline you're going to put in that car? Matter of fact, you know, the S550 or whatever. You can't put anything but premium gasoline in that car or else it'll break down. So we use that same and we say to students, well, why do you eat hot Cheetos, drink soda? Why do you do all of this stuff to your body? Is your body more important than that car. I mean, your body is more important than that car. There's no way that that car is more important. And so when they realize that, when they become mindful of it, guess what? I know they're not going to start eating, stop eating Cheetos and that kind of stuff, but they're going to drink more water. They're going to eat more vegetables. Once you understand that you're doing something harmful to yourself, it changes you. There's something inherently inside of you. It changes you. You cannot continue doing wrong when you know that it's wrong and that you know there is an alternative and other things that you can do. So that mindfulness, that power over time changes them. And again, it improves them. It improves their relationship with their siblings. It improves their relationship with their guardians. It improves their relationship with the community. And it most certainly improves their behavior in school.
That's great. So let's get a little bit of advice from you then. So, or wisdom, if some folks are watching this that have children themselves or nieces, nephews, or friends have children, what are a few simple things they can work with them on or mention to them or talk to them about that, maybe move them in the right direction?
You know, we use the practice of yoga and mindfulness to basically, I don't want to say, we use that practice to kind of like just enhance things that they already know and they're doing. Again, sitting down, you know, counting to 10, breathing, you know, understanding that your breath is really a superpower. And if you regulate your breath, you're going to basically calm yourself down. You're not even going to calm yourself down, but you'll calm other people down. And again, it is a practice. It is something that you got to do over and over. But I think one of the most important things that we try to let people know, especially coming off of COVID and all these kind of things, is just understanding some real basic things like your sympathetic nervous system, your parasympathetic nervous system, understanding that your immune system, there is 6 basic things that you need to do to keep your immune system strong. So when they understand those kind of things, you know, the 6 things you need, your diet is very, very important, you know, exercising, which, you know, was about yoga, stress reduction, you know, and it's amazing how much stress exists with young people. And it's a shame because I can remember as a kid, I was happy like all the time. Stress didn't exist in my life. Sleep, the fact that, you know, if you got to get a good night's sleep, you know, hygiene, you know, during the height of the pandemic, we're washing our hands 20 times a day. Now, not so much. And then, of course, herbs and supplements. The way that we're eating these days in this country, there's just no way you can get all the nutrients and vitamins in your body. So it's extremely important to understand that. So things like that are things that we really like to hit home with parents. And I think that parents really enjoy it. And the kids, they love the practice. They really do. They love the practice once they really get engaged. And, you know, and when we're with scholars, it's like maybe for the first 2-3 classes, we don't do any yoga. We're basically trying to get through to them, trying to understand, you know, we have games, we have curriculums, you know, don't stress the tests, the math on the mat. We have a lot of different things that we make the practice fun as they're learning it.
That's wonderful. And you mentioned the 4 classes. Can you tell us a little about those to finish up? And those are for adults as well as kids?
Yeah, these are community classes. We have a class every Monday at the Enoch Davis Center, 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Enoch Davis Center, and then every Wednesday at Mount Zion Progressive Baptist Church, and that class is 5 to 6 every Wednesday, and then we're at the Willis S. John Center every Thursday, and that class goes from 6 to 7, and then we're at the Sandlin Center every Saturday 11 to 12, and then when it gets a little warmer, we're going to be back at the Carter Woodson Museum for a 9 a.m. Saturday class. So again, we have 5 classes every week, and these are community classes, all free community classes, except for the class at Willis S. John Center. So we want the community to know that this practice, keep the heart strong, keep the body flexible, keep your mind clear. This is an extremely important practice, and I think it's catching on. This is a vibrant urban community, St. Petersburg, and there's tons. I mean, everybody's doing yoga in this town.
Yeah, no doubt. And if it is someone's first class, first time trying yoga, what do they need to bring? How should they dress just to give them a comfort level? Do they need to bring a mat, a blanket?
To our classes, you don't have to bring nothing. We have mats. We have bolsters. And trust me, I'm not trying to get anybody to put their leg behind their head. Our practices are always solid, restorative, slow practices. It's really beginner yoga. But we, you know, and I have a great team. I have 8 people that work with us at Mindful Movement. And I pride the fact that our instructors, we could take somebody who's been doing yoga for 20 years and somebody that's their first time, and we can give them a class that they can both manage.
That's brilliant. Well, it's such important work, and it's an area that doesn't get as much attention as it should, especially in the school system. So really wonderful that you're doing that, and we'll look forward to following your continued work and supporting you, and I really appreciate you stopping by and sharing Mindful Movement with us.
Joe, thank you for your time. Our goal is to be in every elementary and middle school in Pinellas County within the next 4 years, and we're working towards that.
That's great. Clayton Sizemore, thank you.
Namaste.
Namaste.
From stpetecatalyst.com.